Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. My name is Don Allen. Over in Studio B, we have Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing tonight?
Fine, Mr. Allen. A beautiful day here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, looking out from our studios. It has been just, well, it's been just beautiful. You know, we had a tough winter. And in some regards, Don, I wish that about 1,300 Palestinians who have lost their lives could be here with us and alive, if you will. Last week, we made some predictions on this program with respect to the war in the Middle East, if you will. In fact, I kind of was saying, where or where is Neville Chamberlain, the British foreign minister in the mid-1930s, who getting on an airplane in Munich, Germany, after being taken to the cleaners by Chancellor Adolf Hitler, said, "We have agreed that there will be peace in our time." One of the most incorrect and infamously wrong statements ever made. Boy, does the world cry out for peace in the Middle East and the Ukraine and et cetera. But it is Gaza, Don, and the Palestinian people that I know that my concerns and prayers are with. And all that are suffering and dying in that conflict. But over 1,300 now, two attacks, one on a United Nations school, one on a marketplace. The Israelis are masters at denying culpability or responsibility. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, exactly.
They keep talking in terms that it's not them. United Nations clearly is getting kind of ticked off because they do have specialists and experts, which is lacking by the Palestinians. They can go in, as you know, as a former military person, they can go in, they can take a look at the shrapnel from the projectile, they can take a look at the pattern of shrapnel, et cetera, and they can basically tell you as experts what kind of munitions that was. And only the Israelis have these 155 millimeter self-propelled guns, as well as 105 millimeter cannons and 150 millimeter mortars and et cetera. But it is just unbelievable, the targeting of civilians. You know, 80% now, Don, in closing, 80% of the casualties in Gaza are women and children, babies. You know, that's what you need to begin to generate genocide, you know what I mean? Same thing that's been happening in Black America for a long time. But I just think that we would be irresponsible, Mr. Allen, if we did not talk in terms of the loss of life and serious questions about the intentions and the motivation of Israel as a civilized society. You know, I've been watching the Jewish commentator Wolf Blitzer on CNN, and CNN has really turned into a propaganda machine for the Israeli government and for Zionism and for the Jewish lobby. And I think that is so sad, because the Palestinians, the Arabs, the Muslims, if you will, do not have that kind of platform.
Yes, they don't.
And consequently, they are being out-marketed. I hate to use that word, Don, are being out-marketed in America and the West as it pertains to their side of the story. But again, disproportionately, the number of Palestinian women and children, babies, that are being killed as we speak tonight here in the comfort of, quote-unquote, our studios here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Don, what have we got? A lot of things going on in our city, a lot of outrage and et cetera, civil rights violations, exclusive stories, investigative reports and things being done. Looks like we'll be looking at all of that tonight. But what do we got, Don?
Well, I think we should start out with what's been going on in the news here, especially the incident over this that started this weekend that was broke by the Independent Business News Network and then subsequently by the Star Tribune and Channel 4, 5, and 9. And in regards to Mr. Al Flowers and the police going to his house to allegedly arrest his daughter and or a family member. And then
it was his daughter. It was his 16-year-old daughter. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then attacking him, beating him to a pulp and taking him down and putting him in jail. Although, you know, from what we understand, Hennepin County before he could even get into the Hennepin County jail. And so there's been a lot of chatter, Mr. Edwards, on the internet and on the different social media platforms that said that when it originally broke, that it was made up, that this was a fabricated story to get hits and get views and start stuff in the community. And
that was absolutely correct, Mr. Allen. I received a number of calls during the early part of Saturday morning from individuals who were saying that it was being said that my colleague had manufactured this for what you just said seconds ago to generate revenue and et cetera, to get hits and et cetera, that no such situation had taken place. There was a lot of back and forth by individuals all day Saturday. In fact, it began to generate itself into Alfred Flowers had actually confronted the police, attacked the police, because he was attempting to divert the police, keyword, that his daughter, his fugitive daughter, could escape, and which she did. And then there were discussions about the fact that she was a fugitive, if you will, and that Mr. Flowers was going to be charged with aiding and abetting, obstruction, interference, and everything else. And I was puzzled as I heard this, all doing Saturday, if you will, and Saturday, you know, it was a beautiful day, a lot of activities going on, and et cetera. And then late in the evening of Saturday, kind of going into Sunday morning, I got absolute confirmation in a conversation that I will not reveal who the particular person was, who in the course of the conversation said to me that it was unfortunate that Mr. Flowers had got himself caught in a situation in which it had caused his daughter to escape and become a fugitive from justice. And I just had to say, where did you get that? You haven't been going around all day saying that to people, have you? Because that's just totally untrue. But, you know, maybe what we'll have to do is go to the narrative, if you will, because I was saying to some colleagues on the West Coast who have called me over the last couple of days about this incident here in Minneapolis, distraction, as Chief Janae Harto referred to it.
Yes.
Asking me what the heck happened. And I said, well, there's a lot of information that has not been put forward by the White Fourth Estate. So I guess that's the reason that we're around, Don. You know, Jekyll and Hyde, as we've been referred to by some folks. But a couple things that we need to know, community needs to know, our listening audience domestically, internationally. First of all, let me move ahead a couple of days. Let me move ahead until Monday, so we really don't have to waste our time talking in terms of the police coming to Mr. Flowers' home at midnight, if you will, in the dead of night, and indicating that his daughter was to be taken into custody. And, of course, Mr. Flowers, according to even the police reports and apparently electronic intercepts, because there was a telephone intercept doing some part of that confrontation, in which Mr. Flowers was merely asking if he could see a warrant.
Yes.
Now, I know that some police officials have said that there was no need for a warrant, that a warrant is not necessary and et cetera, but then that's not totally true. In order for the warrant to be executed, there has to be a complaint from the agency that has authorization and jurisdiction, and that would be Human Services, if you will, in the probation department. There is some dispute now if that was ever made, and I have to tell you, Mr. Allen, on Monday of this week, just a couple days ago, in the Hennepin County Juvenile Court, a Hennepin County District Court judge reviewed the evidence, if you will, Mr. Flowers's daughter. We're not going to mention her name, and if a caller calls in and mentions it, then that's fine. But the attorney of record, if you will, State Senator Bobby Joe Champion, argued eloquently, if you will, and effectively to the court that there was no constitutional reason that action should be taken, that the procedures and et cetera had not been adhered to. And so it's a key word, Don, that they use in the legal profession. It's called probable cause.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
right.
Probable cause to execute under color of law a specific action. You know, for those that don't understand it, go get you a copy of Blackstone. Okay, that's the big law book.
Yes.
And a Hennepin County district judge, juvenile judge, sitting on Monday in the state court here, ruled in favor of that argument. And Mr. Flowers' daughter was released, if you will, and the court ruled that there was no probable cause to have gone to Mr. Flowers' home in the first place. Now, I don't know how they're going to deal with this, because in the course of the arguments by Attorney Champion, who, as we said before, is also one of two African-Americans in the Minnesota State Senate, he pointed out that the state had, at the hearing, if you will, no copy of the warrant, nor could they identify who it was that had ordered the issuance of a warrant, if you will. And the action pursuant to the warrant that called for Mr. Flowers' 16-year-old child to be taken into custody. Now, I thought that those were things that would probably have been important for all to know and to hear, that a court has already ruled that there was no probable cause. See, that's a key word, Mr. Flowers, and we're going to kind of insist that anyone that calls and has questions that they remind themselves that we are in America, though not always for black Americans, we are governed by probable cause. Going back now to approximately, 1202, 1201, there in Mr. Flowers' home, Mr. Flowers apparently aggravated and annoyed the police there. And ultimately, there were as many as 7 police officers there in the house bringing him under control. And when I say bring him under control, I'm talking about taking him down, beating him, handcuffing him, etc. But Mr. Flowers merely asked to see a copy of the warrant. It was not provided then, and clearly it's not yet been forthcoming, though I'm quite sure that Attorney Champion, Bobby Joe Champion, State Senator, Minnesota State Senate, could confirm one way or the other. And so Mr. Flowers' daughter was released, okay?
Okay.
Now, Mr. Flowers was also released on Sunday, Mr. Allen. I don't know if you're aware of that. He was released on his own recognizance because he has not been charged. See, that 36-hour thing that is so important under the Constitution, when you feel like you don't have what it is you need to meet that threshold, then there are some other arrangements, procedural administrative arrangements that you can initiate. And what happened, Mr. Flowers was released at approximately 2:50 p.m. on Sunday, just about the time that the chief was getting ready to have her press conference at Shiloh Missionary Church, talking about the need to maintain order, peace and tranquility. Okay, so Mr. Flowers came out, his daughter came out. There was a press conference yesterday at the Minneapolis Urban League. You and I talked about that. People spoke to the importance of due process, if you will, probable cause, such things as that. This morning's edition of our major paper here in Minnesota, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, there was reference made to a proposal, which apparently has been under discussion for the last couple of days, that a special investigator, which I'm more in favor of special prosecutors, Mr. Allen, you know what I'm saying? But the special investigator from an outside entity, in fact, there was an editorial in yesterday's morning, Minneapolis Star Tribune, a long editorial by the Star Tribune, in the matter of Alfred Flowers, indicating that the Minneapolis Police Department and the city of Minneapolis should probably go in that direction. So what was happening with the exception of Attorney Champion, folks were merely repeating what had been said by the Minneapolis Star Tribune yesterday in their editorial. But it was Bobby Joe Champion who put forward the idea, if you will, of an independent counsel, if you will, who would take a look at the circumstances surrounding the altercation between Minneapolis police and Mr. Flowers. And so hopefully at some point the person to be appointed, if you will, or selected by the, or agreed upon by all the parties, City of Minneapolis, the Hennepin County Attorney, and et cetera, and of course, Mr. Flowers, his legal representatives. My understanding, it would be a Mr. Lewis, former assistant U.S. attorney here in the Federal District of Minnesota, an African-American. His father was a longtime, for over 20 years, director of the St. Paul Civil Rights Department, if you will, well-respected, and et cetera. And so this has generated discussions here with regards to how African-Americans are treated in this city, if you will, by the gendarmes, if you will, and if this can be corrected. Now, here's where I'm at, Mr. Allen, and then our phone lines will certainly be open. We went through a five-year process here in Minneapolis from 2004 to 2008 because of actions that and conditions that were imposed by the Department of Justice on the Minneapolis Police Department. In fact, the department came close to being placed in federal receivership because of continued problems with its relationship with the African American and other communities. And so there were all kinds of agreements that were made, consummated, if you will, signed off on, and et cetera. Many of those are supposed to be operational. Unfortunately, Mr. Allen, the city's mothers and fathers, after the federal mediation agreement was not extended by the refusal of the then Mayor R.T. Ryback and then Chief Tim Dolan, both parties had to agree to an extension. They refused to do such, and so consequently the statement in the last two stories in the Minneapolis Star Tribune that the Police Community Relations Council was disbanded. Certainly it was. But there are agreements in the, and let me just give you the date and to our listeners. The agreement that was signed by all parties and shepherded by the Department of Justice was on December 3rd, 2003. And I got to tell you, Mr. Allen, there was supposed to be an annual report, if you will. There hasn't been a report since 2008. So I'm not surprised, as a activist, if you will, and commentator and et cetera, that here we are again with tensions running extremely high, if you will, and et cetera, and once again people trying to recreate the will. Let me also say this, Mr. Allen. This is not the first time that a request has been made, and in that case it was granted almost 20 years ago. Whew. In the matter of the death of Tysel Nelson in North Minneapolis at the hands of police, if you will, where a special investigator was appointed. Unfortunately, the investigation disintegrated. There was no indictment of the officer. Dan May was the officer's name. And so I'm just not sure how special investigator as opposed to a special prosecutor is going to work out. And I'm aware that they're talking about Mr. Lewis, former assistant U.S. attorney, but I don't know if that will be agreed upon by all the parties. But, you know, hopefully there's some people out there that know, a lot of people saying that they know about all aspects of this entire situation and the events surrounding the assault on Mr. Flowers, and Mr. Flowers' alleged assault on the police, because in closing on this particular dissertation, it started out that Mr. Flowers had used his fist to attack the police. Mm-hmm. And then through the recognition of his attorney that Mr. Flowers, though he had bruises everywhere you could find, he had no bruises or lacerations on his fist.
Mm-hmm.
So it was that he had grabbed a police officer and in the shirt, and that he had attempted to rip off the police officer's shoulder mic. Okay, that would then make it plausible that he was attempting to aid and abet the escape of his daughter. And then finally, they said he bit the police officer.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah. So in the last two editions of the paper on today, Wednesday, and yesterday, Tuesday, the news story now is that Mr. Flowers could possibly be charged with, I don't know, fourth-degree assault for assaulting a peace officer by biting the peace officer. Okay? Peace officer has not been seen, and I noticed that they do not indicate where the peace officer was bitten.
Well,
these phone lines are open.
They're open.
We're talking in terms of the circumstances leading to the assault upon a African-American activist, if you will, a man involved with education programs and other kinds of activities. He also served with me for 5 years on the Police Community Relations Council, PCRC, if you will. In fact, let me tell you a little side, Mr. Allen. I know you'll be interested in this. This is for all those that say they knew what was going on. Do you know that the supervisor on duty the night that Mr. Flowers was beaten was a police officer who served for 5 years with Mr. Flowers on the PCRC?
Wow, that's incredible. But Mr. Edwards, you just said something very telling that we have to remind our listeners. When Terrence Franklin was in the basement with those officers, they said that he grabbed an officer's gun, which if he did, if he didn't do, that's suicide, because Terrence Franklin died. Now they're saying that Al Flowers punched him or grabbed his microphone. You know, that would have been
his shoulder mic. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, his shoulder mic. This would have been Al asking to be killed.
The death penalty. Asking for
the death penalty. Okay, so
yeah.
These are two matching kind of circumstances that, you know, number one, you don't raise your fist to one of these Minneapolis police officers. You just don't do it. And I don't think Al would do that with his a daughter in the premises. I don't think he would do that, period.
As well as a young cousin
of
the same age. Yes. And so there were two young African-American females, his daughter and a cousin, and Mr. Flowers and all. Yeah, go ahead, Don. You're on point.
Yeah. Yeah, and so we're watching this develop, and we're watching the and this is something I just need to get into. We're watching the tension of the Minneapolis police force with two of their brothers being permanently removed from the force after it was decided that they would not join the force. And I'm talking about the two officers that called the lesbian
police. Be returned to the force after being suspended and fired. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, and they would not return to the force, but they were on paid leave, and so. Uh-huh. You know, there's some tension within the ranks. First of all, Mr. Edwards, we have to look at that these police officers, especially these entrenched white male police officers, do not have any respect for the chief of police, Jhené Harto, at all whatsoever. Number two, those tensions are being taken out in our community by the non-normalist body, which is the black body non-normalist, which is poor, unemployed, homeless, just...
Poverty stricken.
And so with that said, you know, I don't see any alternative than for the feds to come in and put this police department under receivership. What do you say?
I have suggested, Mr. Allen, in my column in the Minnesota Post and Recorder, the oldest black newspaper here in the state of Minnesota, in my column for this week, I have called for and this was, this was before the Flowers incident, by the way, because mm-hmm. also of some problems within the fire department with regards to the shrinking numbers of African-American firefighters and also now the shrinking numbers of African-American police officers and other officers of color. In fact, if I were the chairman of the Minneapolis City Council Public Safety Committee, I'd be pretty concerned at what happened to his fellow Asian applicants. We had the largest number of Asians ever apply for the CSO positions, which sets you on a course to become a permanent police officer, that is the community service officers. And of the 24, only two were declared to be eligible to move on to the next step, which is the background checks. And we can rest assured that they won't make it. The blacks did a little bit better. Of the 29 blacks that allegedly were passed on to the next step, four of them were identified as being eligible to move on to the next level, and that's the background checks. And the African-American females, there were nine. Three were identified as being able to move on, but the word is already out that none of them will make it. Now, in the situation where we have hired in the last number of months, two classes are getting ready to, well, one class, we're getting ready to hire a second one. There are no African Americans in either one of these classes, and I just was told by a source with city government that allegedly 3 months ago a Somali was in the class of 3 months ago, which was 29 officers. And I said, I just can't believe that, because we were looking at the pictures of the class. I didn't see any Somalis in there.
Well, you know what I'm saying? You know, it might have been a white Somali, Mr. Edwards. You know, they do have.
You know, it must have been. It must have been a Somali whose family actually had Italian roots. And he and his family, he was a fourth generation white Somali.
Exactly.
But anyways, the last two classes of officers that have been sworn into the Minneapolis Police Department have been all white.
Yeah.
And in the fire department, the last class of 19, only one was a person of color, and he was both African American, mixed race, African American, and Native American. And so this is happening in a city where we talk so much about what's the word that they use?
Equity.
You know, we don't want to use the old words like integration and things
equity.
Like that. But, you know, where we, you know, reducing the disparity, diversity, right? Diversity, is that the word we use?
Well, they've been using equity quite a bit too, Mr. Edwards. You know, the mayor, equity this, equity that. We have to make sure there's equity all across the table. But when the equity report came down, which was the disparity report, October 2010, she didn't peep a word. She didn't say anything.
Yeah, I know. And so I'm puzzled by that. And so that now takes us into this whole situation with Alfred Flowers and what has happened and what is being said and what is being done. Now, the Committee Against Police Brutality did hold a rally and protest at the third precinct, because that's the precinct where these officers came out of. And there were about 35 or 40 of Michelle Gross, who is the founder and longtime activist. She is a Caucasian woman, but she will get out there and do battle. So there were about 30, 35 of them, as I understand it. If there were more, we apologize, and anyone who was there can feel free to call in and give us the correct number, if you will.
Yes, please. We have a lot of calls holding.
But let's get that phone number down. We haven't given the phone number. Phone lines are open, if you will.
And our phone lines are packed. Our number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. If you've been on hold a while, I apologize. We have a call coming in from Rome, Italy. You are live on the air, sir.
Yeah, hi, I'm Jack Shepherd. First of all, the things I heard about Gaza and what you're talking about, the racial disparity in Minneapolis, are so true. I'm very honored to be talking to both of you people for saying such truthful things, because I'm president of an NGO in Gaza and periodically the Open Rafa border, and I go there to help those people, because, and I'm even Jewish and 25% Sioux Indian. So you're so right on. And what makes me mad is there's no exit, that they're stuck in a ghetto and being bombed. You know, we had our Boston Tea Party, and compared to going to war, fighting for that, what these poor people are suffering. And every couple of days I call my friends, because I've been there before to negotiate between Hamas and Fatah to get them together. But Israel doesn't want peace at all. It's just a game. It's just like Iran talking to Curry. It's just wasting time until they get the nuclear bomb. You know, they're just gobbling up everything. If you look at 1946, everything was Palestine. You look at today, there's a dot here and a dot here and a wall here. It's not even possible to build a state, and that Secretary Curry would only deal with the Fatah and not the Hamas is just ridiculous. And then, like, the three poor Jewish boys that got killed, right away, Hamas did it. Hamas did it, but it had nothing to do with Hamas. He blames everything on Hamas, and what's unfortunate is that he's supported by the settlers, and the settlers, they demand to keep building settlements with our American money. That's what makes me the maddest. We give them, because of the APEC pressure, which controls our national politicians, we give them $3.1 billion every year, where we have homeless and we have people in need. We have people that don't have food, that haven't gotten food stamps, long-term food stamps since, January. I mean, there's so many problems. Okay, let's get back to the subject right now. First of all, I cannot see it rational that why a 16-year-old girl, because she had a violation of an ankle bracelet, needs seven policemen to come at midnight. Well, what's wrong with 9 in the morning, or especially such a wonderful person like this Mr. Flowers that you described has worked with the police department before, calling him and saying, where's your daughter? Will you bring her in and let's take care of this? 12 o'clock
tonight.
And by
the way, sir, let me just say to you there in Rome, Italy, that's the protocol. That's one of the reasons that the district juvenile court here ruled against any action or punishment or penalties against her, because there was no violation of the statute. And one of the things that the judge apparently said was that that has always been the protocol. In fact, here in our beloved county, in a situation in which you're coming out to get a juvenile unless they have been involved in a major capital crime, in other words, murder, the probation officer calls, representing also the interests of the state and of the human services, and is accompanied by a sheriff's deputy, not local police, and go out to the home and retrieve the person in question, but only after making a determination that there's been a violation of law. And in this case with Mr. Flowers and his 16-year-old daughter, the court ruled that none of that had been applied. And so that's a good observation, sir, by you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, one last thing, then you have other callers. It's just I'm running also for the U.S. Senate from the Independent Party, and if I get the nomination, I'm filing an official discrimination denunciation to the U.S. Department of Justice, and I've already talked to them, and in fact, it's completely written up, because for a simple thing like marijuana possession, 9.1 black people are sent to prison for every one white person. That's the highest disparity of any county in Minnesota, and 3 to 4 times the national average. And the other quick thing is there are two programs that encourage the police departments to arrest more drug offenders to get more funding to help with their expenses. To me, it just sounds bizarre, so it's obviously easier to pick up a poor little black guy on the corner or something doing very little to next to no damage than going after a 3-year research project. You it's just for me beyond words that in Minnesota, I went to St. Paul Central. I didn't even know what prejudice was, that we should have the highest county ratio of disparity penalizing black. If you're a black in Hennepin County, one out of three will go to prison sometime in their life. You know, it's unfair. You know, it's just so unfair. And thank you very much for
all right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Be safe.
People
all right.
And
take
everything.
Care.
And God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sir, we have another call.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, we're packed and stacked. Miss White, go right ahead, please.
Paul, good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Oh,
real good.
How are
you
doing?
You guys are fascinating and stating the fact. My condolences, first of all, go out to Al Flowers. I've known Al for many, many years, and too many years to really admit to. But my condolences go out to he and his family, because I just can't imagine what has happened to him when he really is a negotiator. You know, like you, Mr. Edwards, you're on the scene, you're brilliant, you're informed, you're trying to bring, some knowledge to how people can really get along and how to
It just
blows me away. I've been reading, Donna, your articles have been fantastic in IDNN. And so I hope get involved and really read what's happening. It doesn't matter if you went to Minneapolis Public Schools. You write it so that we can read it. And I just want to say also that if this is an internal investigation, forget about it. I ran for Congress in 2008. Against Keith Ellison, to put that out there again. I don't like to harp on it, but what I did when I ran for Congress was I wasn't a tired, old black woman who decided she wanted to have a new career to run against this ex-attorney who did a minimal job in terms of the Fed. And I just wanted to say that I did some research. And one of the internal investigation was the first piece of research I did with the police department, and I actually sat down with police peace officers and talked about how things could get better in the 5th District. First of all, the number of officers that are on board is way too short. If you have a fewer number of officers, they are tired. Their overtime hours are... I'm not up to date on those numbers, and maybe Mr. Edwards and you two, Donnie.
Let me give you the numbers as it pertains to Minneapolis. In fact, we've got a real continued crisis. The day after tomorrow, another 9 officers will be retiring because they're taking full advantage of a change in the law as it pertains to pensions. We will be down to 770 sworn officers in this department. And that will take us basically 100 officers under what should be an authorized strength based on the credit rating and insurance, the insurance requirements, if you will. We should be at about 860 to 880. In fact, we should be, based on the actual new population statement that has been made, or the increase, which now allegedly we're over 400,000 in population. They've been applauding and patting themselves on the back. Well, we should, based on that number, should be at approximately 1,200 sworn personnel. We're not talking about a combination of clerical workers and et cetera. St. Louis, Missouri, let me give you an example, Ms. White. St. Louis, Missouri, which is now about 70,000 smaller than the city of Minneapolis. They're about 330,000 down in St. Louis proper, though, the surrounding area and the metro area is still large. St. Louis, with a population of about 340,000, has 1,400 sworn personnel. Wow. We are now, we will be after tomorrow, we will be down to 770 officers, in which at least a third of them have to do desk duty. And we have situations now, and of course, you know, folks are scared to stand up and say anything. They're all on these Facebooks and et cetera, but no one talks about sometimes at night in some of our precincts, and we have here for the purpose of our national and international audience, we have five precincts, okay? The most loaded precinct, of course, is the first precinct, which is downtown Minneapolis, okay? It is at the max. In North Minneapolis, which has the highest rates of shootings, killings, and et cetera, there are nights, Mr. Allen, Ms. White, that we have sometimes no more than four squad cars.
Wow.
We have no more than sometimes four officers on duty. And it's just about as bad in other precincts. And one of the things that is troubling Mayor Betsy Hodges is that she made promises, particularly in the silk stocking districts, which are primarily the far end of the fifth ward and the fifth precinct and the third precinct, is that they would have maximum coverage, right? If these folks knew late at night, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, how few officers were on the street, sworn personnel, I think they would probably move. Okay, but I appreciate that you asked that question, because that allowed us to state some of the figures.
Yep.
Well, that was my point. You articulated it beautifully. And the other thing I found when R.T. Ryback was serving as mayor of the Marathon, I knew when I spoke to the officers, I said they were tired. There weren't enough officers, and you've made that point succinctly. You've made it clear that there's a shortage, and then where the officers are actually placed. And I was hoping you had that information. I kind of knew you would.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I talked to when I talked to the officers, they were so the words don't describe the morale in terms of the anger. They just were despondent when it came down to leadership, and they said it out loud. They're like, "What?" And Donnie, I can say this, you know, and just to be clear, you were my campaign manager for the 5th District congressional race in 2008.
Yes.
On the
yes.
Republican ticket, I was given a unanimous endorsement by the Republicans, because they really didn't care if I was green with red polka dots. They wanted some kind of satisfaction in the 5th district, and not in terms of winning the congressional seat, but some answers, because people of all backgrounds and denominations and skin colors and educational levels live in the 5th district, and they were tired and scared in 2008. So without leadership, that mayor, if she doesn't, you know, get off her hindy and start addressing what Mr. Edwards just spelled out, we really need to march on the off. I'm coming back to live. I've been doing an experiment out here in North Dakota to see how it is working for a government bureaucracy. And so I'm coming back Monday. I'll be back in the Twin Cities and, possibly going on that ticket without any party backing. But
okay. All right then.
Yeah,
all right. We'll be looking to hear from you.
Yeah, we'll talk about it later. Beth,
all
later,
right. Thank you, Ms. White. And have as we said last week, have a safe trip back, if you will.
Can't wait
all
to
right.
get home. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Well, Ms. Allen, we've got continued calls. Let's roll right into them.
Yes,
hello?
Yes, you're live
Hi.
On the air.
I'm Heather Johnson, running for U.S. Senator with the Libertarian Party. I wanted to call in and give a recap of the demonstration today for Al Flowers at Minneapolis 3rd Precinct.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it. Go right ahead.
Great. There was a lot of people out there. There was Communities United, of course, with Michelle Gross. That was a great effort on her part. There were people from Save the Kids, people from Indigenous News, people from a variety of political campaigns, libertarians. There were grassroots or Green Party people, Republicans. There was even Bill Don, who was challenging Mark Dayton in the DFL out there.
Okay.
A lot of people talking. The message, Al Flowers' children was there, his granddaughter. A lot of people talking. The message that I got and spoke about also was that we the people need to take direct action in standing up to police brutality in the state, and I talked about doing that nationally. We need to demand not just that they carry insurance, but that they face criminal charges. These are, if it were anybody else, they'd face criminal charges. And our leaders and politicians should respect their role to serve the people.
Okay.
All right. We think that's excellent.
Okay.
We think that's consistent. And that clearly is consistent with the platform of your party, correct?
Yes, that is completely what
that's right.
We stand for. But I wanted to draw attention that there were multiple groups out there today.
All right. Let me ask this question, because I had said earlier that I thought maybe 30, 35 people, that was the initial number given to me by a stringer. What was your estimate of the number of people that were there in front of the third precinct?
There was probably about 35, 45 people.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But there was people in front of the precinct, people across the street, on all of the corners, holding up signs, protesting.
Okay.
Around the square as well.
What we call a grid
yes.
Protest. Very good.
Yes.
Centrally located. Okay. All right.
That's great.
All right. We appreciate you calling in.
Thanks,
and feel free to call in during the course of your campaign.
Of course.
Please.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hey, caller, you are
very, very, very interesting. Michelle Gross and a group of people went on out there and did what they said they were going to do. But again,
okay.
Let me cut it off. If we have caller and the queue, let's get them on.
Yeah, we have about 12 more callers. Caller, you're live on the air.
Okay. Got you.
Caller, you're live on the air. Would you like to speak to the host?
Hello?
Yes, you're live on the air.
I'm not sure.
That is okay. You.
This is Pastor Devin Miller. How are you guys?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Fine, Pastor. How you doing?
How are you doing?
Down in that Texas heat?
Yes, sir.
Okay. What can we do for
call,
you? What's your question?
Well, I wanted to call in for a couple of reasons. One, because I said I would, and it seems that Mr. Allen and I are kind of jabbing at each other, so I just wanted to, kind of state a position. Of myself as far as what I try to do and in light of the Flowers incident and also some of the chatter that's been on Facebook over the last couple of days over what's been happening on the north side with the number of homicides and shootings that's been going on over there.
Okay.
One of the positions that I've taken, and Mr. Edwards, you know my history, and I tried to inform Mr. Allen that my history is one of boots on the ground. It's not necessarily trying to be in a high place with the work that I've done in St. Paul and all of that. And so
With the God Squad.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. And we always believe that, the work should be done by the people who are most affected, that we cannot mm-hmm. always depend on our politicians. And sometimes, and quite frankly, we can't depend on most of our civic leaders at this particular time. I've never been one to ascribe to anybody's viewpoint or side, be they a minister, be they a activist or whatever. My thing is, if you're going to do right, let's do right. So I have been encouraging, even from here, even though I'm not in Minnesota anymore, but I put in 30 years of work in Minnesota, and I believe my record speaks for itself, that it is really time for voices like you and even Mr. Allen, for you to really sit down privately and really come up with what I call a manifesto that will include all the issues that we have, but also will include solutions. Because if we continue to speak against each other in public, all we're doing is giving fodder to those who already say that we can't get along. And that's
mm-hmm.
always been my point, that we don't mm-hmm. need to take public airways to belittle and demean everyone, but we can do it in the house. That's been the deal. You take it home
mm-hmm.
and you deal with it in the house, but in the public eye, you always have a united front. And,
mm-hmm.
and that's what is Minnesota. That's what Minnesota needs right now. And I think your show is perfect. I believe, with the balance between you Mr. Allen and our elder Ron Edwards. I'm glad his voice is back out there because it had been silenced by the media on many fronts. Because
right.
he does speak truth to power.
Appreciate
but
it. Let
that,
me just say this, Reverend Miller. It's interesting that that's almost like an epiphany. Actually, a manifesto is in place. In fact, a month ago, and actually it was through the efforts of Coach McKenzie and Mr. Flowers that a call was sent out after a very bloody week that there need to be a coming together. And certainly that attempt has been made, and there have been three specific meetings of the overall steering committee. The largest gathering was 75. It looks like, you know, the normal number is going to be around 50, but that includes the state representative, Ray Dean, who has been very functional, if you will. We have police officers there and et cetera. And ironically, it was Dr. Peter Hayden who suggested about a month ago that there be the creation of a manifesto and a preamble. That has happened. In fact, it was presented to the group just yesterday after the press conference at the Urban League under the leadership of Dr. Hayden, if you will. That preamble and manifesto is available, if you will, to be placed on the Internet. I would suggest in your case you know how to do this to the extent of who I'm talking about. Feel free to contact Turning Point, in which, of course, Dr. Hayden has been the chief administrator for 38 years. Ask
right.
them to send you a copy, okay? And we would encourage other listeners to call Turning Point here in Minneapolis, ask for the office of Dr. Hayden, if you will, and take a look at the manifesto slash preamble, if you will, because people are embracing what you just said, and I take it in the spirit in which it is delivered, if you will. And
yes,
let me
sir.
Also say this. We actually here owe an apology to Dr. Hayden as an example, and I've said that to my colleague. We had mentioned Dr. Hayden's name as one of those that was not doing anything, but I have to tell you, Dr. Hayden has taken significant leadership, and it comes at a time when his son, who is one of two black senators here in the state of Minnesota, and
right.
is the assistant majority leader of the Minnesota Senate.
Yep.
Both father and son have been in the forefront of trying to pull us together, to get us to work together, et cetera. So, Reverend Miller, I appreciate your vision, if you will, because just what you said is already in a functional phase. So thank
right.
you for calling us from down there
yep.
in cowboy land, if you will. Don't forget the Vikings.
Yes, sir. Yes, never.
Okay.
And just one last point. Just I think what we also need to do is really start gathering people together across Minneapolis and St. Paul even to really go over that with a fine-tooth comb so that we have a united front. That would be
there
my only suggestion.
There you go.
And take it off of Facebook, and I've been suggesting that. Take it into the churches that are open. Take it into the community centers. Bring the people together. Give them that information so that we can put hope back into North Minneapolis and in the St. Paul.
Let me say this. Let me just correct you. Not only North Minneapolis, the entire cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul and the surrounding suburbs, because the mayhem is everywhere, unfortunately.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate
yes,
you calling, sir.
All right.
Feel free to call us
thank
at
you.
Any time.
All right.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Reverend Devin Miller calling from Dallas, Texas, a longtime activist here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul. At one point, they had a very functional group, as you remember, Mr. Allen, called
yes.
the God Squad.
Okay? Yes, I do.
Yes, yes.
We have another call, Mr. Everson.
Let's get them in.
Caller, you are live on the air. Hello. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Is that a 612 number?
That's you. You just said it. The 612 number. You're live on the air. Go ahead. Who's calling?
This is Manu Lewis calling out of North Minneapolis.
Brother Lewis,
hi.
How you doing? What's your question?
Yeah.
I had one question about these indictments and the ability for officers to be indicted or put in a position where they have to testify against another officer. Now, so I, it's true or not, but is there a policy against that, or is like somewhere?
No, there's no prohibition. If an officer is called in a what is called a petit jury, a trial or a grand jury, in order not to testify as it pertains to the subject matter at trial, they have to take the Fifth Amendment. And then it could become an administrative matter with their department to determine if, in fact, the officer has violated his or her oath of office, number one. Number two, the rules and regulations which allow that officer to be licensed to be a police officer, because in order to be a police officer, you have to be licensed, okay? And then basically, thirdly, what other kinds of possible civil actions could be taken for an officer refusing to testify to a issue in which that officer was a party to. Now, we came close to that 2 years ago when a $3 million judgment was rendered against a couple of departments, including Minneapolis, surrounding the so-called Metro Gang Strike Force, who were beating people and stealing their property and et cetera. And what the city did in order to get out from under pressuring some of their police officers and officers from other jurisdictions to testify, they just went ahead and agreed to settle for $3 million and paid people back. I mean, people got anywhere from $200 or $300 to $15,000-$20,000, okay? But to your question, the only provision of the Constitution you can hide behind is that you will have to take the Fifth Amendment. Self-incrimination. Okay?
Right. So right. With that being said, being that we have a numerous of incidents where officers have been accused of, and, you know, witnesses have came for, you know, we even got camera footage, but it seems like no officers are actually getting charged or no officers are actually getting indicted. But the only thing that's happening is a lot of settlements, you know, a lot of money is coming out of. And
there, you go.
Right, so
I don't know anymore in my long civil rights history here, which certainly goes back 50 years, I don't know of more than two or three officers in jurisdictions here in the Twin Cities that have been indicted, if you will. And I know of no officers. The closest we ever came was in 1973, when an Eagan police officer shot and killed the son of the civil rights director of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, a young sergeant in the United States Army home on leave named Eric Bedford. I know there are some out there in the hinterlands in this city that will remember that. They will remember his mother, his aunt, his father's quote-unquote sister, Martha Benford, who died of a heart attack as an outgrowth of the stress and et cetera. That was the closest we ever came, because by one vote, the grand jury declined to indict the police officer. This was in the matter of the death of Eric Benford, the son of the just retired at that time civil rights director of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department. So you're on point, Mr. Lewis. There has never been a situation where an officer has been indicted for taking the life of a person of color, or actually assaulting them in such a manner that there are consequences, legal consequences. Good question. Anything else?
No, sir. You hit it on the nail. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. All right, Mr. Allen, continue on. If we've got these calls lined up, let's bring them in.
You are live on the air, Queen. Hello.
Hello.
Oh, I'm sorry. You are live on the air. Go ahead. Sorry, sir.
Oh, hey. How you doing, man? This is Zach King. I'm calling from Minneapolis.
Hey, what's up, Zach?
And, hey, what's up, man? I don't know. You probably heard about me.
I posted a story about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, the police had beat me up downtown Minneapolis. And, you know, I have a clean record and everything. I'm a concealed carry holder, you know, permit owner, so... You know, I wasn't breaking any rules. I was by myself walking to my car, coming from a club. A friend of mine.
Wasn't that in front of the Fine Line?
No, it happened right in front of Pizza Luce.
Okay, so, well, just around the corner from the Fine Line. Gotcha.
Right.
I remember your case. Go ahead, sir, your question.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, like, what's the difference? You know, why is everybody jumping up now and all these senators and all these people stepping up because the community activists got beat up instead of when I got beat up, everybody played, you know, like, you know, people wasn't interested or whatever, you know, probably just looking at me because I'm a young black male and people have their own thoughts. When, you know,
let me just cut to the chase because there's been much discussion over the last 48 hours about that very thing. Mr. Allen and I even were talking in terms that when T.T. Franklin's head was blown off by police in May of last year, we had a momentary concern, but there were a lot of power brokers that didn't have anything to say. You know, it's based on, unfortunately, the politics, if you will. I will remember, Mr. King, your case, and you're absolutely right. The rationale on the part of a lot of people were, well, you were a young dude, probably were doing wrong, and et cetera. The Flowers situation, because of his activities, because of the programs and associations and et cetera he has, folks are a little bit more concerned. But let me just say, I know what you mean.
Years ago, at the Elks,
I was and nine other African Americans, all senior citizens, were put on the floor, shotguns to our head, beaten and kicked, and et cetera. And I got to tell you, I probably didn't get any more than four or five telephone calls from people talking in terms of what had happened. But here's what I have to say to you, sir, as an elder speaking to a young man. I well understood the politics of my community, okay, and I well understood that there are different things that motivate and drive people to do certain things, and not all of that motivation is sincere. You're absolutely on point, but let me just say, at the same time that you were going through what you were going through in front of Pizza Lucci's, a brother by the name of Booker was beaten almost to death by Minneapolis police just inside of Robbinsdale, and the system manipulated that whole case that a gun was placed in the car he was riding in, and he is now serving 3 years in the federal penitentiary for being a felon in possession of a gun. No one has said a mumbling word except this program, Mr. Allen and Mr. Edwards. Appreciate your comment because I think you're going to generate some response. Appreciate it, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Great.
Glad that Mr. King called. Hell of a question. Hell of a question, Mr. Allen.
Mr. Edwards, I'd just like to speak on that before I get to the next caller, because I remember when this happened to Mr. King, and he had sent me a picture of him in his hospital bed with his face all busted up, and he does have a permit
mm-hmm.
to carry, and the police just ran over and whooped the snot out of him. And so,
mm-hmm.
that's, like you said, that's a very interesting question, because say if someone in Betsy Hodges' Rolodex gets beat by the police, who's a black man, the response is going to be 100% different than it was for Mr. King and Mr. Flowers.
Yeah, let me say this so that Mr. King, and he's still listening, is absolutely clear that certainly this commentator understood what was happening. And the reason I said the politics, it was ironic that the two officers who initially stopped Mr. King and conducted the search and ultimately the beating of Mr. King, that they were a salt and pepper team, by the way. One was black, one was white. But it happened to be Mr. Allen, and this is a shock for the city in some regards. But I'm glad Mr. King called. The white officer in question was the son of the then police chaplain of the Minneapolis Police Department.
Huh.
And see, Mr. King was never told that by the attorney of record that he had, unfortunately. Okay?
Interesting.
And that was the politics that came into play, and that's the reason that the young man got shortchanged.
Okay, and we do have another caller. Caller, you are live on the air with the Ron and Don Show. Who's calling?
Hello, am I on the air?
Please, you have to speak
up.
Turn your radio down or turn, yeah.
Oh, hey, my name is Zach Matoir.
Oh, hey.
Mr. Matoir, what can we do for you? What's your question?
I'm calling, number one, I'm completely outraged about what happened to Al. I'm sure everybody knows that me and Al best buddies for many years, and I made some life changes that took me out of the sector of community activities, but still love Al like a big brother. Man, it just really hurt me for this to happen to him, and for me to see the kids and the way that it's affecting them. That's from a personal point. Now from an outsider looking in, I mean, you know, how much do you have to do to get sick and tired, Mr. Edwards, myself, Al's mother, many other community activists, Spike Moss and others, met with this police department some over 6 years. I know a lot of people say five, but actually it was a planning process to even get things rolling with the Police Community Relations Council.
That's right.
And so it was really 6-plus years. So we did all the work, and we did everything we were supposed to do. Mayor R.T. Ryback and the city council at that point in time wouldn't listen to us when we said the work wasn't done. We said the work is not done. We have a long way to go. We need we need to continue. And they said, we ain't continuing nothing. We got another plan in place to replace y'all with our own peoples, and they're gonna watch us. They're going to be the gatekeepers now. They're going to watch
us. That's right.
So ever since then, everything that we built up has been torn down. And been torn down, I mean drastically. It's like somebody dropped an atom bomb on it or something. Just completely shredded all the community police relationships that have been put into place. Now, Mr. Edwards, I am getting to a question, sir. I know that year after year after year, City of Minneapolis pays out funds to individuals who have filed suit against the City of Minneapolis for police-related issues. Here's what I'm proposing, and then I'll be quiet. I want to hear Mr. Edwards' response and Don's as well, because I know he happens to have somewhat of a legal mind as well. I believe, it is my feeling, I want to bankrupt the City of Minneapolis. I want to bankrupt the City of Minneapolis by filing a class action lawsuit that would involve Mr. King and all the other individuals for the past 15, 20 years have been brutalized by the Minneapolis police, to the families of the individuals who have been killed by Minneapolis police. I think they should all come together, file some type of a class action lawsuit. If they can't do that, maybe something that's similar to a class action lawsuit. And demand, and once it's all said and done, demand payment in full from the City of Minneapolis and just shut them all down. And with that, I'm just going to be quiet and listen. Because they ain't doing nothing to help nobody. They ain't doing nothing to help nobody.
Okay.
So let's just start up a whole new city government, okay, and let them take our taxpayer money, and let's see if we can put some stipulations into the city charter. Let's even change that sucker. Let's put some stipulations in there that says communities shall be represented by those who live there, that look like us, that I'm sorry, I'm going to go into a rant, man. So I'm going to be quiet, Mr. Edwards, and I'm going to let you go ahead.
All right, thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Montoya, if you will. Mr. Allen, let me just, because that's a heck of a question. I'm not sure that the federal courts will allow a class action lawsuit of that magnitude, because it definitely would do what Mr. Montoya just indicated. It would bankrupt the city. But here's the thing. The city of Detroit, at a time when the population was probably 70% black, things started going downhill. Things started happening. The city started finding the ground cut out from under it. And, of course, in the process, services and et cetera were being cut out, and the black population of Detroit has suffered immensely. And then after they had reached a point where the city was teetering, if you will, the Republican governor of Michigan appointed an African-American, by the way, a Negro, as special master to actually run the city of Michigan, and that's what he's done. He's run it right into the ground. They've taken pensions away. You have black people in Detroit that had worked 30 and 40 years for the city of Detroit and had pensions. Those pensions were cut by half and three-fourths and et cetera. So the system, the court system in America, found a way to do just what Mr. Montoya has suggested, a class action initiative, if you will, supported by the Michigan legislature, supported by the Republican governor of Michigan, if you will, the appointment of a special master to come in and to facilitate the continued dismantling of Detroit, where people now talk in terms that at some point in time in the next 10 years, Detroit will return to being a white city. You understand what I just said, Mr. Allen? A white
city. Yes, I do. Yes.
And, but the genesis, the legal genesis for how this was initiated, it took 11, 12 years to dismantle. I know how bad I felt when the governor of Michigan appointed the special master, a brother, a smooth brother, you understand, come out of corporate America. And I well remember Mayor David Bing. I went to college with Mayor Bing. He was an All-American basketball player, NBA Hall of Famer, and et cetera. And what they did was under the provisions of the law and federal bankruptcy and all that other kind of thing, Mayor David Bing and the city council of Detroit were just stripped of their authority under color of law, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, in closing, what Mr. Montoya has suggested is something that does have a precedent. You know, we're always taught that what's important is for you black people to understand precedent. Mm-hmm. And if you can show us that there was a precedent, then we'll let you move ahead. And I'll be doggone if Mr. Montoya, who, if I remember correctly, is a native of Michigan, if you will, has raised a hell of a question that, if handled properly and legally, may be able to get away with it here in Minneapolis. A class action suit, which very well could change, quote-unquote, the fiscal portfolio of the city of Minneapolis. That's my reflection and thanking, Mr. Allen.
Yep. Thanks for the call, Zach. We have another call here.
Go ahead and get them.
Queen, go ahead.
Is this Queen Nucci?
This is Queen Nucci.
Ah, all right, Queen. Queen the Don's been trying to get you on. Go ahead. What's your question, please?
Yes. So, taking that there's been a series of events, I don't know if you all are aware that there was a St. Paul police officer killed today on the west side of St. Paul.
Because we have an international audience. He was not from St. Paul. He was from Mendota Heights, which is a suburb of St. Paul.
Suburbs of St. Paul. That's right.
Yeah, Mendota Heights, which is a suburb of St. Paul. And what has happened because of the size of the police department in Mendota Heights, which is probably about 14 or 15 officers, and the size of the municipality, the St. Paul Police Department came in to handle the administrative piece. And also there is a kind of a technicality because the officer, though a member of the Mendota Heights Police Department, was shot and killed inside of the municipality of West St. Paul by about two blocks. So you have multiple jurisdictions. But I think it's just important that we let our listening audience know we're absolutely on top of it. So he was a police officer from Mendota Heights, Minnesota.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
So my thing is this, is that, you know, as a woman, as a black woman leader in North Minneapolis, I just want to say that I think that all of this with so much violence going on, particularly I've already seen that there's been it's been a lot of women that have been assaulted. And I think that this is the time that we need to really push for people to really start thinking about what's going on with this whole piece, with this violence piece, and definitely start having some more direct actions and conversations about holding police accountable for their actions. And so my question would be, do you think that this is a moment where we should, again, start using this as to mobilize us to start doing a lot more demonstrations or protesting, or do you think that this is just one of those hype moments?
My colleague, we haven't had him enough on discussion. Mr. Allen, give us your thinking on the question raised by Queen Nucci.
Well, first of all, what I've seen from past experience, and that's all I have to go on, is history and past experience, is that protests yield little in the Twin Cities because if there's a protest, then where is the plan? And when there's a protest, there are people in our community, as you well know, Queen, that will sneak out the back door, knock on Massa's door.
Yes.
And says,
yes.
We're not like those people. Okay. We want to know. We'll cut a deal. And this has gone on repeatedly for the last, since I've been living here. Okay. I was born and raised here. And so you have a system here where, just like Devin Miller called, and I hope he's still listening, but he called and he says, yeah, we probably need to air our stuff inside. But I have a problem because if I go to Stair Step Foundation and ask Alfred Babington Johnson what happened to those millions of dollars for Dairy Queen, Tire Plus, and Burger King, how come black people today do not have jobs? I'm tearing down the community. Now, if I go behind closed doors and ask this brother the same question, he'll say, Negro, that ain't none of your business. So, therefore, I have no choice but to ask him in the public sphere. And what you're saying about protests, there's a time for protest, but there's also a time for those same people protesting to put what they want down on a piece of paper in a plan that functions in the group that they're working with. Okay? Because if you don't, you'll get sidetracked. You'll get sidetracked real hard. And it's going on now as we speak.
I have to concur with my colleague because I want to give another example so that our listening audience, both locally, domestically, and internationally, understand that there's been significant research and reflection. For 2 years almost on these programs, Mr. Allen and I have been talking in terms of access to the billion-dollar Viking Stadium that's going up in downtown Minneapolis. And, of course, we have been attacked for raising the question and attempting to keep our community appraised of what is going on. And there are certain leaders that indicate that they are not to be questioned about where what little money that they were paid went. And no one has been able to give us the figures in regards to how many African Americans, as an example, are working on the stadium and et cetera, particularly in that they're counting by hours, which means that you've got a significant amount of hours. And I've said on this program, we've already calculated that the average salary on the stadium is about $32 per person, okay? And if you've already worked a million hours at $32 an hour, the African-American community, which allegedly is a part of a commitment that 32% of the workforce shall be people of color, and I've heard some of my leaders indicate that actually it's now 34%, but when you ask them, okay, so how many hours have been worked by African-American workers on the stadium, on this project, at an average of $32 an hour, they can't come up clean with a figure. You know this, and we all know it. Mm-hmm. And so I have to concur with my colleague that at some point there has to be the public discussion, just like there's now public discussion with regards to what happened to Mr. Flowers. Mr. Flowers has, in fact, said he doesn't want it to be discussed behind closed doors and in a clandestine manner. He wants it to be known, open, and he, I think, appreciates. I can't speak for him per se, but I know what I've heard him say, that there needs to be an examination. Your question is a damn good one. The problem is that we do not have a history of following up. When we get angry, it's momentary, and then we move on to something else. By the way, that's not how we got freed in this country.
Correct. Okay. Correct. And then we continue to perpetuate what's going on, you know, in terms of with the women. I mean, I just want to make sure I stay focused with that as well, is that there's been like a heightening of these gun cases, you know, shooting with these women as well. And I think that when the brother was saying, wow, you know, there's a lot of focus now because know, about flowers, but we have, this is what started the conversation about the violence that was going on in our community, and particularly the violence that is going, that is happening towards black women in North Minneapolis. And I think that's something that we need to continue to keep a record of and continue to keep holding, you know, holding this thing about using this gun.
Let me just say, Queen Nutch, in support of what you just said,
yes.
In a meeting of the group that Mr. Flowers and Coach McKenzie helped found,
yes.
At the New Bethel, if you will,
mm-hmm.
the head of the Minneapolis Assault Unit, who is an African-American lieutenant, concurred with the very things that you're saying right now, which you said at a meeting. He concurred with it, that far too many of these assaults and killings center around, quote-unquote, abuses and other kinds of activities against women of color.
Mm-hmm.
And so you were on point that one of the genesis and one of the issues driving the formation of the group, the Northside Committee Against Violence, was the abuse that African-American women and others are taking. And so your point is well taken. I appreciate the fact that you've laid it out, because I'd like to hear some of my funding individuals that are funded, whose programs are supposed to be talking about the wellness, if you will, and the health of the African-American family, explain to us, I'm like Mr. Allen on this one, what's the plan?
Yeah.
Well,
we have back on that.
We have about 8 more calls. We appreciate the call, Queen Nucci.
Thank you.
All right,
okay.
Thank you. Mr. Allen, continue on. If we have callers, let's get them in.
Okay.
This is what this is all about tonight.
Caller, Mr. Woods, you're live on the air.
Hey, Don. Rob,
hey, how you doing?
Fine,
yes,
Brother
sir,
Woods. Go ahead. What's your question?
Listen, I've been listening to the show, lady, but these last three individuals that got on and spoke, I agree with them 100%. And so what's happening, and this is a comment, okay, not a question, but a comment, but we've forgotten how to fight, okay? That's the problem, you know, and we're dependent on certain people to do certain things. Now, that young brother that got beat down by the police, nobody said nothing, and that's the problem. All these
figureheads. You're talking about Mr. King.
Mr. King.
While listening audience
okay.
may be just turning in, you're talking about
Correct.
The young man, Mr. King. Go right in.
Yeah. And so with everything that's going on now, we are literally asleep here because they make it move to keep us subdued. And if we don't look out for our young people and grab them, because that's where the leadership is going to come from, the real leadership. In the 60s, this would have been unheard of. Okay, but because they have put us asleep with drugs and wiped the women and the men, folk and grandma out, we don't have a clue. And we keep depending on these people to bring us out. And every time we get ready to plan something, they go back and tell Massa, which is going on. We got a bunch of Sambos running around here talking about they this, they that, and the other. So I was really kind of, that got my dander when that brother got on. And nobody, and I can identify with him in his struggles, no leaders called him. Okay, so I just wanted to make that comment on the, you know, to make a comment on the last three callers that called in, because they was right on time. And we have to stop selling each other out. And
All
thank
right.
you for your
thank
time.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate
I'll
it.
I'm giving the truth so you can listen. There you go. And we have another couple more callers here, Mr. Andrews.
Let's go. Let's get them.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Yes, you. 7936, you're live on the air, and you're breathing in the phone. Hello.
All right, let's move on. We've got people holding. Let's move on.
You're live on the air. Go ahead, please, caller. Would you like to stay in the queue? Okay.
Move on.
Okay. That's it on the calls, Mr. Edwards. We have people
okay,
in queue
right.
that are listening right now, but we have no new callers. And if you are one of the people in queue and you do want to talk to the host, hang up and dial back. Other than that,
and you know, Mr. Allen, we've been moving on at such a brisk pace. We are pretty much close to our cutoff time.
What? 6 minutes before?
Yeah. Wow.
And
calls were pouring in. Well, like I said, we we appreciate definitely and most explicitly the callers. It's needed. Kind of gives you an insight. I was hoping that I was going to hear maybe from some of our leaders who were going to give us a kind of indication of their thinking on what happened to Mr. Flowers, but also young Mr. King, Mr. Booker, and others. You know what I'm saying, Mr. Allen?
Yeah. Let me stop that. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, I really was hoping that, but, you know, maybe we got just what is important enough. In-depth analysis, if you will, people who are involved firsthand and have their boots on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what we need. What we need.
And we couldn't ask for any more. Again, let me just say this. We appreciated that first caller we had. Our continued prayers go out to the Palestinian nation, to the Palestinian people in Gaza, in that open prison, if you will. Of course, our hearts go out to the young people, Israelis, who are losing their lives, if you will, members of the IDF, that's the Israeli Defense Force, and etc. This is a dangerous world and planet that we live on right now. And let us pray that there is some response. By the way, Mr. Allen, very quickly, we've got about 3 minutes left. In fact, but we can go kind of long as we want after 10. We can go a couple more minutes. But let me just indicate conversation about the only time that the special investigator was used here. As I said before, Officer Dan May, who was involved in shooting and killing Tysel Nelson there in North Minneapolis, as Mr. Nelson left a teenage after-hours party, if you will, that was being put on by a person who is now very much involved, a young lady at that time who's now very much involved in community. But everybody wants to kind of forget what happened. But one of the things that did not happen is that Officer Dan May was not indicted. And the reason was is that the group of leaders at that particular time lost all the evidence.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. And if they want to discuss it, you know, welcome to call in next week, and we can talk about those video and tape recordings of at least six young people who were witnesses to the killing of Mr. Nelson, who came forward to give testimony, and our lives became hell because no one could ever quite figure out how it was the police knew that they had given those statements. You know what I'm saying? So anyways, Mr. Allen, we're pretty close to the wrap-up time. I think this has been one of the quickest programs I've seen for a program that went an hour and a half.
Yeah. We're pretty fast. Well, we'd like to thank everybody for listening to the show. We'll be back next Wednesday at 8:30 Central Standard Time for our international listeners. You've heard, listen to the Ron and Don Show. And we're going to go out with Mr. Edwards' Grandmaster Flash. Don't push me. I'm too close to the edge, you know?
Oh, all right, sir. Don't push me. I'm too close to the edge. Go on, Aaron.
It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Broken glass everywhere, people pissing on the stage, you know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise, got no money to move out, I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front room, roaches in the back, junkies in the alley with the baseball bat. I tried to get away, but I couldn't get far, cause a man with a tow truck repossessed my car. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes.